Welcome, everyone. This is Nate Marquise, host of the Defending the Natty podcast. I hope everyone has been doing great over the month since our last episode. You are listening to the preeminent college fantasy football dynasty podcast. You can find us on all your podcast feeds once a month on the 15th of each month, with exception to this episode, I guess, as we've had a few things to juggle this week, running a little behind. But if you want to support the great things that we do, you can head over to campusdecanton.com, subscribe there with one of our tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devi, C2C, and betting needs. I'm sure, as most of you know, you can find me on X at CFFNate. With me, as always, is my co-host, Jared Palmgren, who can be found at CFF underscore Jared. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Nate. As you kind of mentioned, we're recording this a little later in the month, and to say that the past couple of weeks have been busy for us might be a little bit of an understatement. Again, we could have recorded the show on time, but like on Sunday, I had three shows, and then the day we were supposed to record, I got sick, which was just perfect timing there.
Is this your Jordan flu game?
Is this my what game?
Your Jordan flu game, where Jordan played with the flu and he just put out an incredible performance against the Jazz.
Oh no, I'm feeling much better now. I'm like Lamar Jackson after he took his dump. So
you needed a day long dump, and then we're ready to record.
That is exactly what I needed. But yeah, man, we've been doing a lot of stuff this past month. Again, we had the CFF guide that came out earlier this month. You and I were cranking away at that thing pretty much up until the moment that we released it. So that's gone over well. You guys are enjoying that. And then obviously Underdog releasing their best ball content all of a sudden. So we all had to kind of pivot and made sure we were up and ready for that. And so crazy month, but man, I'm ready to get back to talking some Dynasty.
Yeah, the Underdogs thing was wild because I feel like we got about a week's notice, maybe just a little bit more, but we weren't really sure what it was going to be, how exactly it was going to go. And then all of a sudden it was like, bam, here you go. And thankfully, we have people like Moxley and Ethan and Chris K that were just all over it and ready to hop on live streams and get out as much information as possible. Now, I mean, look at us now. We got rankings. To go along with the live shows and drafts, we got a bye week cheat sheet and all that. So I feel like we've kind of weathered the storm and now everybody's jumping into it. How are you liking those Underdog drafts so far?
I've only done one so far. I'm kind of saving myself a little bit. Again, I'm doing one this week on the Chasing Natty episode. This will come out Friday, so you guys will check that out on Monday. We'll do one live on that show. I enjoy it for the most part. Again, it being Power Four, it is definitely a little bit more of a challenge, right? I am excited to talk about some of the, shall we say, large discrepancies in the projections that Underdog kind of automatically put up there and like who they're suggesting some people would draft. So I'm definitely excited to kind of talk about players that people should be avoiding and not just drafting off those projections. But for the most part, I like them. Again, it's different, right, than Fantrax best balls, because Fantrax best balls, you kind of have to gather all your friends, find 12 people. Your prize pool is like $60 max if you're doing $5 best balls. But here it's $10 entry, and everybody's competing against each other in the same contest. If you win this competition, you get $20,000,
right?
Which is like, holy crap.
To me, it's like season long DFS is essentially what it is, right?
Pretty much.
That's instead of it being a single slate DFS, this is like, okay, you're drafting your guys for the entire season. God and everybody can join in on this particular draft, and big prize at the end if you happen to just field an incredible roster. So good luck with everyone out there.
And again, going off the DFS thing, like in this one competition, they only have the one open right now. You can have up to 150 entries. So like you can have multiple teams within this one competition. Nate, and on top of everything else, like again, we got the CFF guide, we got the Underdog stuff, but like the college football game's also out. I forget, did you purchase your copy or?
I am not a gamer. My free time does not lend itself to playing video games. I feel like with as much time as I spend researching writing, ranking, all that. And then with college football soon actually starting, and we get to actually watch real games with real people out there. If I all of a sudden bought a game console and put a game in, my wife would leave me in like 3 days. There's no doubt about it. Because I imagine it would be just like, I mean, I played some in college with my college roommate. We had a blast. It would be just like me going into dynasty mode would be just like me in CFF. And I would get so consumed by it because I would not want to lose so bad that I would be a total mess.
Oh, my girlfriend's already left for the weekend on a girls trip, and let me tell you, nice, like, timing. Now that, I know, right? It's fantastic. But I love my girlfriend so dearly, but she deserves her vacation with her girlfriend. No, but like as soon as they left, like, I was on my own playing my dynasty mode, and let me tell you, I was hurling some expletives at FIU as I played as Kennesaw State against them. There were some shouts had in this household.
How close are you to Kennesaw State?
I'd say probably about 40 minutes drive. Okay. I mean, it's Atlanta. Everywhere is 30 minutes away in Atlanta. Gotcha. But I used to live like really, really close. It was one of the schools I was considering going to when I got out of high school. So nice. They were like my backup school if I couldn't get into like UGA or Tech.
Very nice.
But it's still a very good school.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I guess we talk about CFF Dynasty now or something like that. Like, yeah, is that what we do here?
I think so. We'll keep to that. We won't dive too much into the weeds there with gaming stuff. But yeah, on with tonight's show. I teased it on Twitter. You know, I said, hey, we're running a little behind, but you're going to love it. And you and I have talked about it. We're very, very excited for this episode. And the tease that I put out was 2025. And that's all I said. And today, we will be having some fun predicting what we think the first round of a 2025 CFF Dynasty Startup Draft could look like. All right. So we are projecting over, you know, basically a year into the future here, breaking out our, you know, our Magic 8 Ball or Crystal Ball and seeing, you know, shaking it up and seeing what we come up with here. So I know this task was hard for me. I did a mock draft, you know, with a future first round pick last year that I did an article on. When you were preparing for this, Jared, how hard was it for you? Was it very challenging?
So I gave myself a rule immediately that kind of knocked out, I'd say, 80% of players that could potentially be considered. My thought process is in the first round of a startup CFF Dynasty draft, right? I'm not taking a single person that only has 1 year of eligibility left. So that by virtue, that means if you don't have 3 or more years of eligibility left going into this season, 2024, I wasn't considering you. Like, you got to have at least 2 years going into next year. And that really kind of narrowed it down quite a bit to really the freshmen and a couple of, you know, redshirt sophomores, redshirt freshmen and stuff like, or, and just true sophomores, things like that.
That's a great rule. I did not apply that rule to myself, but I'm looking at my list now, and subconsciously, I think I may have actually applied it because none of these guys break that rule. Let's do this real quick before we get into the actual draft. I mentioned how I did this same exercise last year, and so in 2023, I wrote an article projecting the 2024 first round CFF draft. Now, it wasn't for dynasty. Mm-hmm. It wasn't for a dynasty startup. It was just for redraft. But I kind of want to let the audience know just how hard this is.
Oh, yeah.
To actually get right. I went back and looked at it, and I've got it on the screen so that you and I can look at it here. But let's just go down some of the names here and just kind of critique real quick.
Let me just say before we get started here, in all honesty, you did a good job. It's just there's some things that you just cannot account for.
Yeah, and I tried to put research behind it. Like, okay, here's how many on average over the last few years quarterbacks have been taken. Here's how many P5 versus G5 have been taken, and that type of thing. The one thing that I found, when you're projecting a year out, first round drafts in CFF regular, you know, just redraft, standard redraft leagues, people will not draft anybody in the first round that is a projection. Like, mm-hmm. you have to have proven substance and shown that you are legit. So I took that into account. But here's the list just for the listeners, before we jump into our dynasty projection here. Quinshon Judkins, right? Ole Miss at the time. That seemed like pretty legit. If he stayed at Ole Miss, I think we could confidently say, yeah, that's a first round,
He would
probably
have been a
first round
first round
draft pick
pick
this
this
year.
year.
The second one I had on there, running back Damian Martinez, who is at Oregon State. And you will, as we go through this list, it will just make you realize how much things fluctuate year to year in college football. So far, two players in, two transfers,
Transfers.
right? So Martinez, not bad. I mean, this is a guy that's going in the second round of drafts now, right?
Second round, and like if you stayed at Oregon State, I think he'd probably be in that, 1-2 turn on most drafts, right? Kind of where Devin Neal's going.
We're in the ballpark, right? But here's where we get a little off the rails, right? Jaquindon Jackson, running back, Utah, right? That didn't go so well. He is now at Arkansas, so we're 3 for 3 on transfers. But unlike Judkins and Martinez, he is not going anywhere close to the first round. So swing and a miss there. Preston Stone, I thought that I would play for the upside there. That one's not working out,
That was
right?
a again, he's not a bad pick even in CFF drafts now, but I think your loyalty to Stone there might have blinded you a
It
bit, Nate,
was.
because
It
the again, Rhett
was.
Lashley quarterbacks are great. I don't recall one going in the first round in any recent CFF seasons.
That was a swing and miss, but I came back. I struck out
Grand
with
Slam.
Preston Stone, but here's a banger. I got Ashton Jeanty on there, right? Seems right now he's the 101. This seems like, well, of course Ashton Jeanty's gonna be on there. But think about it a year ago. I mean, this was a guy that wasn't being drafted in the first 10 rounds. This is a guy that was like, yeah, I mean, we think he's gonna be good, but we had really no clue at the time. So felt pretty good about that one.
No, that was a very good one because like even George Helani last year, right? Like even if we knew that George Helani was like going to be the number one guy, he wasn't going anywhere close to the first round, right? Like he was going down in like the eighth, ninth round. I bet even if GNT wasn't there, he'd probably be at most going fourth, fifth round last year. So we didn't think of the Boise State running back position as a place where you would think you would go and grab a first round running back. So great call there.
And I think about a year ago this time is when some of those rumors, correct or incorrectly, were kind of starting to float around that maybe Helani had another year left. So, Matthew Golden sounded pretty solid at the time. He was at Houston. He was a Dana Holgorsen wide receiver. Never ended up even being the wide receiver one there at Houston. That was not so great. But followed it up with another good one, Tet McMillan, Arizona, right? He is a consensus first round draft pick now. Nico Iamalieva, that's the one where I'm like, okay, I'm going to project one guy out. And it just, I think maybe if he would have gotten more playing time, I don't think people saw enough. So he's not a first round pick.
I
And then,
think that was a good point, right? I think when you wrote this article, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were kind of talking about the idea that Iamalieva would have started multiple games by the end of the year, and that would have really kind of put him into this first tier.
When I wrote it, I said, okay, this is the one guy I think I'm going to break my rule for and say, I don't think he's going to probably play that much in 2023, but I think people are going to be. I thought the problem was I thought Joe Milton would be better. Had Joe Milton done what Hendon Hooker did, people would just plug and play and they would draft Nico in the first round now. But Milton kind of left a bitter taste in people's mouths for sure. And then the last four here, I'll just go ahead and knock all four of these out. Baron Morton, boo, that was a bad pick. Always injured. That was stupid. Marquez Cooper, Ball State, he did well. Did not pan out. Here's the real bad one. Jamal Banks. Holy smokes. I was banking on that Wake Forest wide receiver pedigree there. That one didn't happen.
To
And
be
then the
fair,
last one.
I don't even know if it was Banks' fault. It was really just, again, Mitch Griffiths was legit horrendous.
I mean, Banks was going like, I want to say towards the end of like the second round, early third round
I would say
last year in
so.
draft. So I was banking that he was going to be good. He would have that year of production under his belt, and then he's going to come back for another year. Didn't work out. Also a transfer. Half this list is transfers. And then Carnell Tate was the last one. So in theory, I think it was pretty solid. Problem was that Ohio State, everybody came back and then they just added more players and now it's just kind of a mess over there.
And they have Chip Kelly now, which kind of throws a little bit of a wrench into the idea that Ohio State's an automatic top 10 wide receiver every single year for CFF. So.
Okay, let's move on to
Yeah,
tonight's.
let's definitely move on past some of these honorable mentions, which might be even worse than some of the ones you did put in
I did
the
have some,
article.
the honorable mentions were real bad. None of these were even close. I mean, Nick Singleton just kind of crapped the bed. I mean,
Malachi Nelson.
Kavorian Barnes, Malachi Nelson, Dante Moore. You know, I thought a lot of
DT
these guys were.
Sheffield.
Oh, DT Sheffield. Oh my goodness, that was bad. Zachariah Branch. I was thinking about this earlier today. Can you imagine? Remember, I think it was week one. It was either week one or week two when Zach Branch kind of went off, and everybody was like, "Oh my God!" Same thing with Dylan Edwards. Can you imagine after week one of last year, if you would have fast forwarded to July of our present time and be like, "Hey, nobody's really going to be that interested in Zach Branch or Dylan Edwards until the middle to late rounds of drafts."
Branch would have surprised me more. But I've always kind of been hesitant on Lincoln Riley wide receivers because outside of CeeDee Lamb, there hasn't really been a dominant one for college fantasy. I was telling people week one, I was like, do not go and grab Dylan Edwards. That was fool's gold from the very beginning, and I'm glad I was proven right on that.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. But man, they both had an incredible start to their freshman campaign.
Oh, for sure. No doubt about
Okay.
that.
Let's do it. I mean that's the standard first round prediction that I made, but this is a dynasty pod. So we will focus on predicting the first round of the 2025 dynasty startup drafts. Here's the parameters we put on it. And there's essentially no rules. I haven't seen Jared's list. He hasn't seen mine. We're going to go back and forth similar to like what Colin and Austin do on campus life whenever they're picking their their start sits for the week. We have no clue what each other's lists are. You can pick a guy whoever you want as long as we're just going to try to justify that they belong in this predicted first round. We are going to order our players from the ones we are most confident in. And as we work down the list to the ones we are least confident to be in that first round 2025. Are you ready, Jared?
I am quite ready. The one thing I will ask, is it more important for us to say, like, I imagine at some point, like when we kind of rebut each other's different picks here, right? We're gonna like part of that's gonna be like, oh, but what if their coach transfers, or what if like what if, or what if their coach leaves, or what if they enter the transfer portal? I guess can we go ahead and agree that that's like a baseline risk that we've kind of put into almost all of these players, and that it's more. It would be more noteworthy for us to say, for example, like I have an Alabama player on my list that I'm going to say, like, I don't think there's a world where Kalen DeBoer ever leaves Alabama because he's already at the top, right? That would be the
Yes.
argument for him leaving. Because
Yes.
otherwise, outside of five coaches maybe in America, every single one of them has the opportunity to leave, unless I'm going to say, like, Kalen DeBoer is going to the NFL maybe, but like.
Yes, I do understand exactly what you're talking about. And there's a guy that's third on my list because I am afraid maybe his coach leaves. I think it's very likely that his coach leaves. And so, yes, I think a lot of these guys. We got to kind of bake in some of that risk and we can kind of get into some of that. There's no rules. No
No
rules.
rules. No rules.
Okay. All right, let's do it. How about this? I've been talking a lot. You go first. You give me your
Yeah.
number one most confident player you think will be in the 2025 Dynasty Startup Draft.
This to me was the easiest one to write down of all
Okay.
of them, which I mean, I mean, that's why he's first on my list. But like, I didn't think about this for more than 5 seconds about who would be the number one guy that I expect in next year's drafts, right? And that's Byron Brown. Quarterback out of South Florida. Going into 2025, he'll have 2 years of eligibility left. He was QB4 in his first starting year at USF last year. ADP has him as a QB2 this year, really, as long as Alex Golish stays at South Florida and Byron Brown's the starter. There's no reason. Yeah, I'll get to that in a second, Nate. There's no reason to really expect that he wouldn't continue to be what he is. He's a G5 quarterback. I went back and looked. There are not many G5 quarterbacks that come out after their third year. They're they're very much the exception, right? The last true G5 quarterback that came after his third year was Josh Allen, 2018 draft. We all agree that Josh Allen is very much a anomaly in NFL circles. The only other two that even remotely qualify would be Zach Wilson, which was at BYU. They're independent, not even really G5, and then now a Power 4 program. And then also Trey Lance out of North Dakota State University, which is FCS, and also once again another kind of anomaly there. So basically, I use that to say that as a G5 quarterback, I expect Byron Brown to use up all of his years of eligibility. So I'm not worried about him leaving early. The main thing that I know you're going to worry about, Nate, is Alex Golish. What happens to him at South Florida the next couple of years? Listen, his offense is great, but he went 7-5 last year. AAC is a pretty tough conference for a G5 program. There's no guarantee that he continues to build on that every single year. What if he's stuck at 7-5? Again, Power 4 programs aren't going to be coming calling for a coach that's going 7-5 every single year unless they want to hire him as an offensive coordinator, which possibly happens, right? But I think there's a decent chance that we don't see the actual program itself overall improve year after year, even if that offense looks better and better each year. So that's kind of push back on that. Even too, if Alex Golish leaves, Byron Brown's going to follow him if they're really that great. Now, yes, obviously you're going up to the Power 4 level, but there's plenty of places where they could land somewhere in the Big 12. ACC is becoming more and more of a G5 conference with Clemson and Florida State leaving, probably Miami not far behind them. I think there's plenty of spaces where Byron Brown stays a top 10 quarterback for two more years after this year.
Okay. Right off the bat, this is my guy that exactly who I was referencing earlier. He's number three on my confidence scale. And for me, it's less so of a coaching change. Like Byron Brown proved the year before Alex Golish got there in those last four games, he's actually really good, right? We got to see that, and we are kicking ourselves because we didn't draft him everywhere the following year. I think my bigger concern is NIL. Right. Mm-hmm. What if Alex Golish doesn't leave? Byron Brown's really good again. And Miami says, you know what? We want you. Right. You're just down the street from us. Come play for us after Cam Ward leaves, or Missouri. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Some of these big money programs where he leaves that system and all of a sudden he moves way up in competition. I mean, can you imagine at Missouri or something like that, where he's having to play just like an SEC proven schedule? I think that would be my only concern. He's number three on my list, so I'm not that concerned, right?
The increase in competition level is a good point in terms of like where he could end up. But like in terms of NIL, every single player on this list, that both of our lists, can be lured away by NIL. Again, one, we don't know
one of them can't. One of mine can't.
Okay, fair enough.
He's already making $8 million.
Oh. So I wasn't crazy to consider him potentially. Anyway, but yeah, no. Like outside of the rare occasion, right? Like every single one of these guys could be lured away by a better opportunity at a different school, right? So to me, that's a moot point. I agree with you that if the wrong school goes and grabs him and brings him up to a different level of competition, that can end up hurting him. But again, I still think that's applicable to pretty much almost every guy here outside of guys that are pretty much at the top of the sport, which I imagine is going to be the people you are going to talk about here in a second.
Yeah. I do think it's something we need to consider anytime we draft a G5 guy. Like we were really close to seeing, Ash and Jenty potentially having to share backfield with maybe CJ Baxter and Jaden Blue, you know, or Gavin Salchuk. Like there are rumors that some of these big SEC programs really wanted him. And that really kind of changed the dynamic. We probably wouldn't be drafting Ash and Jenty 101 if he's sharing a backfield with somebody else that we really like. Right.
I mean, just ask Quinshon Judkins.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. That's a great. Yeah. He didn't have to transfer up. You end up sharing a backfield with another stud. But yes, I like Byron Brown. I think that's a extremely safe pick. Let's move on to my number one. And You've heard me beat the drum for him for too long, way too long. Avery Johnson is my number one. I actually have probably way too many quarterbacks on this list, but I was looking at back at some startup dynasty drafts. I do think in dynasty, quarterbacks tend to have a little bit more demand, I think, versus your standard startup drafts. Just because you're trying to build, you know, your program, your roster for the future, and quarterback's kind of where you want to start in a dynasty. But Avery Johnson's my number one QB, Kansas State. Similar, he's kind of P5 version of Byron Brown. Like, there aren't a whole lot of NFL prospects for him, so I do think that there is a legit chance that he could play all 4 years in college. Kansas State has made him a focal point of their seemingly pretty strong NIL. Like, Kansas State has actually thrown around a decent amount of money recently in both football and basketball. So he's my number one. I am projecting a little bit because we have not seen him in take over the reins as the number one guy there. But just like Chris Klieman said it at Big 12 Media Days, we asked Will Howard to just go ahead and hit the road. We've got our guy. Thanks. We're good. So, what about you? Did you have Avery Johnson in your first round?
I'll be real. It was an oversight on my part. I think I'm looking at my list. I'm like Avery Johnson. Holy crap! Did I add him to my list? I did not.
Is my love for AJ just getting out of hand?
I don't think it's getting out of hand. I do think again. I think Chris Moxley and others bring up a good point about, like, again. Yes, he has dual threat in the sense that he can rush. Is he really dual threat in the fact that he can also pass? We're not entirely sure of that yet. And I think that is still kind of the question mark to be seen with him. But obviously, like you mentioned, Kansas State believes in him, which is what matters more than anything else. Like, they see him every day in practice, and they would not have pushed out Will Howard if they didn't think that Avery Johnson could hit the broad side of a barn. So, in all reality, yeah, I probably have Avery Johnson as my number two behind Byron Brown. Again, the only difference being that Byron Brown is a guy that, again, we've seen him do it already.
Yeah, he's shown it, and we don't have to question the staff at all. I tweeted about that earlier. Like, there has been some staff changes, obviously with Colin Klein moving on. So we don't know exactly what that'll look like, but I'm going to put a lot of faith in how much faith Kansas State has put in Avery Johnson, right? I mean, they have shown they are 100% in on him. So, okay, who's your number two?
My number two, behind Byron Brown and Avery Johnson, assuming Avery Johnson's now inserted into my ranks here, I'm going Pofele Ashlak. Okay. He's my number one wide receiver in CFF Dynasty. Again, you got 3 years of eligibility going into this year, have two going into next year. Again, similar deal with a G5 guy. He's not, there's no NFL prospects here. I've not heard a single Devy or C2C guy going after him, talking about, like, oh, this guy's going to make the jump. He's not really the right size, a little over 6 foot, about 170 pounds. He is somebody I'm not super worried about leaving. Again, unless he really likes where he was in high school. He played high school in Texas, but also his entire family's from Hawaii, hence why he went to the Rainbow Warriors out of high school here. He's very much a fit for this Timmy Chang offense, the reason why he was able to kind of lock down that starting slot last year. He's going to get improved QB play one way or another between Braden Shager and Michael Alejado. I think that he is somebody that I'm personally okay with looking at as someone that I can lock into 120-plus targets each year, so long as Timmy Chang is running that offense there. Another coach who is very loyal to that program.
Played there. Yep.
I don't think he's going to be really looking to leave, especially when the job's not done, right? Like, Hawaii ain't back yet. That run and shoot offense ain't fully back yet. I think Ashlock would be probably easily the safest skill position person to go into next year's draft.
I love that pick. He is, I'll just talk about him now and we can skip him later when it's my turn. He is number five on my board, on my confidence ranking here, but he is my number one wide receiver. So I am lockstep in agreement with you on that. I love the fact he brought up Timmy Chang's not going anywhere, right? Coaches that have built roots in those programs are less likely to leave. That's a level of consistency that's hard to find now. So I really do like that. My only concern for him is, yes, if he goes bananas this year, somebody could drop a bag and say, you know, come do this thing up here and step up a level and show off what you're about for the NFL and stuff like that. We hope that's not the case, or for him, good for you if you get that money. But yeah, I think that's a really solid. And Michael Alejado, like you brought up too, we see a clear succession in the quarterback situation here, where we feel pretty confident just based off what we saw in his recruiting profile that there may not be a very big drop off from Braden Shager. And it's not like Braden Shager is like some, you know, some awesome QB to begin with. I mean, he's mm-hmm. just okay. So love it. Love it.
All right. Who's your next guy, Nate?
My number two, the only little theme here, it's another quarterback. So I've already talked about Avery Johnson. My number two is Nico Iamalieva. So I, like we talked about earlier, this is the $8 million man. I don't think anybody's going to steal him. He is like I said, I already projected him as a first round draft pick a year ago for this year. I'm going to do it again because I still have a lot of faith in that Josh Heupel, veer and shoot type offense. My only concern for him is I do think this is a little bit of a big year for Josh Heupel in that, yeah, Joe Milton kind of sucked. But he lost Alex Golish. Mm-hmm. And if they kind of struggle again, especially in that pass game, you kind of have to wonder, was it maybe Alex Golish? You know, I mean, he's always been kind of right there with Josh Heupel. So if not, it was Jeff Lebby. So, you know, that's my only concern there. But I like the upside of Nico. I actually considered him a one over Avery Johnson, but I just love Avery too much.
Here's the thing with Nico, right? And I consider putting Nico in the back end of my projected
I
first
love
round.
This. It's, so far, I've listed two people, and you did not actually have them in Avery, your top 12. We're going to have a lot of fun discussion.
Avery was a legit oversight. But, like, Nico, the thing that Avery has and Nico has, I don't think Avery's headed to the NFL. Nico,
he still did 2 years, though. 2 years.
Well, he would still have
I mean,
2 years.
Next year, I guess, yeah, if you're applying that rule like you're saying, you only have 1 year left. And yeah, I guess next year could be his one and done.
Exactly. That, like, to me, that would put him as a one and done.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
Now, if you want to argue that, again, he'll come back for his senior year because Tennessee got to the playoff the year before and they feel like they have unfinished business.
$8 million.
Another eight to 10 million. You can sell me on that, and that there's a reason why I actually legit put him. I thought I would surprise you by throwing him in at the end of my draft, but no, you were ready to talk about him early on this. no, again, I can buy a narrative that Nico stays for all 4 years, in which case, yeah, he would be I would put him above Avery, honestly.
Sure,
I would put him above Avery.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't, but yeah.
But if he stayed all 4 years, but I don't think he will. And that's why I can't put him in my top 12 for this.
I think that's fair. That's fair. Okay, who you got at three?
I got at three. This is where, again, things kind of start dropping a little bit. You know, I'm actually going to switch up my rankings as we do this. This is going to be fun.
Breaking news. Jared has gone two players deep into this thing, and now he has already switched up.
I'm already questioning myself. Nah, we'll go another wide receiver here, because I'm a little the running backs I'm very hesitant on, for the most part, outside of a few guys here. But I'll go ahead and do Ryan Williams, wide receiver out of Alabama. Again, going into 2025, he'll have 3 years of eligibility left. You'll get two guaranteed years there. I don't love the fact that Ryan Williams is coming in late to Alabama this year, right? He wasn't a spring enrollee. So, Nate, you've pointed out before that basically being a spring enrollee doubles your chances of not being a year 1-0. I do think that Ryan Williams is probably going to be one of those guys that can beat that regardless, right?
He's gonna break the mold.
He's gonna. Well, I mean, you know, we have year 1-0s every year that are fall guys, regardless. But I really look at this Alabama wide receiver room, and I just, again, I assume that it's like Ohio State's wide receiver room. But man, like, given the attrition of the last couple of years, it's not like it has been, right? Like, certainly you have Jermaine Bernard, Kendrick Law, Kobe Prentice. Those are all serviceable wide receivers. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Jermaine Bernard this year. all three of them could be gone after this year, right? If mm-hmm. if Alabama's offense is as good as we expect it to be, all three of those guys could be headed to the NFL next year. And really, who does that leave, right? Some guys that I kind of like I like Jalen Hale, but I have no clue what that injury is going to look like a year from now, right? Jaron Hamilton's solid, but not fantastic. I really think there's a ton of opportunity for Ryan Williams, even though he's a late enrollee. If he's as good as advertised, like we're talking about a top four wide receiver in the country, according to the recruiting services, he's as good as he's advertised. He's going to have no problem getting on the field second year as a Kalen DeBoer wide receiver. I don't care if he's wide receiver two or wide receiver one. He'll be productive for CFF. I think that makes him one of the safest guys that you can kind of project into being the first round next year. Because if I tell you right now, Nate, Ryan Williams is a starting wide receiver for Kalen DeBoer's offense at Alabama next year. Are you taking him in the first round of a CFF Dynasty draft?
If you told me he's going to be the primary, like the alpha wide receiver, yes. If he's just a starter, no, I mean, like I wouldn't have taken like, you know, Jalen Polk, you know, like some of the other secondary guys there at Washington. But yeah, I get your point. He did not make my list. I'll say that. So we're a little bit
different as far as being on this.
How confident, right? So to be honest, I only have one other wide receiver on my list, and I would not have put Ryan Williams over him. So Ryan Williams didn't make the list. I like it. I mean, the talent's clearly there, and it's a Kalen DeBoer system. We want wide receivers in that system. My biggest concern is probably less so that he's not there in spring. It's the reclassification thing. Like, he's moving up a level. Not only did he not show up for the spring, but he's moving up a level. I mean, name me the players that have gone on to be like high-end CFF players that actually graduated early, that are like offensive skill players. Like, I can't think of any off the top of my head. I mean, we know of some of the obvious ones. I mean, right? Braylon, with Quinn Ewers.
Was Braylon Allen a reclassification?
Braylon Allen was. So yeah, I mean, that's a great example. When nobody thought he was going to be nearly as good. Hell, most people thought when he actually got recruited there, he was going to be a linebacker or safety, but that's a great example. So maybe Ryan Williams follows that. I like the call. I had so many quarterbacks that I liked that I had trouble squeezing in some wide receivers. Ryan Williams is somebody that I would definitely consider as like an honorable mention for my list.
Gotcha. All right. So, I assume more quarterbacks are coming our way. You ready to talk about your next one, or are we heading to a different position?
So I'll go ahead and we've already talked about Byron Brown, who's my number three. So we've already kind of set our piece on that one. We'll skip over that one. I'll take the lead then on number four here. Is my top running back in this situation. Maybe you didn't consider him because I guess he kind of falls in that Nico range where he could go pro, and that is Minnesota running back Darius Taylor.
Nope, he was my number one running back.
Okay. All right. So he's number four for me. And I'll be honest, like I thought about not putting him up this high. It seems obvious, right? He's the number one freshman going in, or number one sophomore going in drafts right now. You know, he's got the opportunity to play for a couple more years. But man, he sure did get hurt a lot last year, and he was hurt again in the spring. So I'm a little worried about that. But I'm gonna play the odds. It is a PJ Fleck running back that has some eligibility left, and you know, he could be in for a big season. There's talk that like they're gonna throw the ball to the running back more this year. Can you imagine?
Oh, we saw it in the bowl game. We saw it in the bowl game. Darius Taylor got targeted like five or six times.
Can you imagine if like that rushing volume kind of stays in the ballpark of where we normally see PJ Fleck running backs, and then all of a sudden like you add four or five receptions a game? He was a wide receiver for early part of his high school career. The kid can catch the ball. So just a lot of upside with that. I do think there's some concern that PJ Fleck could be coaching somewhere else next year. That guy always loves to look and see who might be willing to pay him money. And I mean, apparently he really, really wanted to go to UCLA, but they said no thanks. But where did you have him as far as your ranking?
He was the guy I was debating whether or not I would go with him or Ryan Williams as my next guy.
Oh, so we both have him at four.
Yeah, we both have him at four here.
Perfect.
And so, again, like
your thoughts, concern, you feel confident with that?
I'm in the same boat as you, where the injury concern is probably the biggest thing, right? Now, granted, we're basing that off of 1 year, so we can't. I feel like we're being a little too harsh on that front.
If you go back and look at his high school stats, he played a bunch. Like he was very rarely out with injury.
I think we're just taking all the Minnesota running backs we've been dealing with over the last couple of years, where they're all getting hurt, and so like we're just kind of projecting it now onto Darius Taylor, because he could be totally fine this year. Yeah. Your point about him potentially going off. Yes, I agree. He's probably the one guy, He would have 2 years of eligibility in 2025 regardless, but he's probably the one guy that I would say I have the least concern among the running backs I have listed here of going pro, mostly because PJ Fleck doesn't give NFL running backs. There aren't any in his coaching career. Minnesota doesn't have, like, Minnesota's not a place that the NFL looks. They haven't had a running back drafted since 2015. That was David Cobb. And before that, obviously, oh my God, I forget the dude who went in the first round's name.
I mean, Marion Barber was really good for them.
Not Marion Barber. Oh my God, I forget who. It's not important. That was over 10. What was that?
It was a running back that went early?
Yeah, first round. I did some research earlier. I forgot to write the name down.
I'm blanking on that too. But we're going to sound silly. Okay, go ahead.
Regardless, they haven't had one in forever. And PJ Fleck isn't going to be the guy that gets them there. I mean, Darius Taylor, obviously, we like the talent. So he'll probably break the mold. But at the same time, I'm willing to take the odds on that, just like you, Nate. Like, already we're kind of hitting a teardrop in terms of confidence into projecting for next year. And I think Darius Taylor, because of his position, because of the system he's in, you just got to roll that dice.
Yeah, it's the same thing as Byron Brown. We would look foolish if we didn't include them on this list. And then they go and do what we expect them to do this year. They're going in the first round. that's inevitable, right? If they do what even 90%, 80% of what we expect, they're going to be drafted very early next year. Right. Okay, so you go ahead and take the lead. Who's your fifth person here?
I have a feeling this would be somebody maybe not on your list, or maybe they are. I don't know. I'm going to keep the running back.
There's no telling at this point.
I know, right? I'm going to keep the running back train going here. I'm going to go Mekhi Hughes at Tulane.
All right.
So I think
he is on my list.
Okay, he is on your list? Okay.
Yes.
Because to me, he's going to take a very similar route to kind of Damian Martinez, right? Where he's either going to be the workhorse at Tulane for the rest of his career, or he'll transfer somewhere that's going to need a workhorse back. This dude loves getting the ball. They cannot stop talking about it on every Tulane beat reporter I listen to and read about. They cannot talk about how much Mekhi Hughes wants to get the ball as much as possible. He is looking for places where he's going to get 200-plus touches. There's really not much else to that, right? Again, you can throw at me a bunch of scenarios where, you know, oh, what if he transfers here? What if he goes to a place like he ends up like Quinshon Judkins? Again, that's the same for literally all of these guys. And so for me, Mekhi Hughes, he's a good all-around back. He's good between tackles. He's a good receiving back. Wherever he goes, he has incredible upside, as long as he doesn't go anywhere. Honestly, even like if he went to Missouri, I think he would do well in that offense, regardless of the schedule, right? Because he would fit that system pretty well. I think there are very limited opportunities, except for if he does go after his third year. After his third year this year, right? Like, I'm thinking I'm okay with Mekhi Hughes. What do you have him at, Nate? I have him at five. Yep. What do you got?
He is he's my number two running back. He's number seven overall for me. So we're pretty close here. He's a guy, if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I would not have had on this list. After listening to the G5 Hive and the Tulane guy, just be like, yeah, Mekhi Hughes, he's going to get a million carries and he's going to have 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns again. I'm like, okay. I mean, they seem pretty serious about it. And so, yes, he's in this list concern, he is a very high floor kind of guy, right? I mean, he doesn't have the upside of a Darius Taylor, but still very high floor. And this is another thing that kind of factored into this. If something goes awry, like let's say he has a good season, but like something goes awry with that staff and he decides he does want to transfer up, who's to say Willie Fritz isn't where he lands back at Houston, You know what I mean? With his old staff. Like if he's like, hey, Willie's like, hey, yeah, you're still doing great at Tulane, but why don't you come prove it in the Big 12 so that you can then go on to the NFL the next year? That's I think Houston's a legit option. Or he's gonna, just based off how much he wants to get the ball, he's gonna consider somebody like Missouri or whatever, where they're gonna, feed a running back one. So I think it's a safe play.
I just
So I like
realized
it.
that scenario that I've put out there would really be a downer on someone else I want to talk about later in this show.
Okay. Okay, so we've already talked about my number five, which is Pofeli Aschlock. So
Okay.
totally agree with you with that one. Let's go ahead and skip to my number six then. This is where it really goes off the rails from my list, right? So far, most of mine, I feel like we're pretty consistent. Here we go. You ready?
I'm ready.
I am going with Bryson Underwood, quarterback, number one overall prospect in the 2025 freshman class. How about that? Am I crazy? Did you even consider him?
I didn't consider freshman in next year's class at all, Nate.
You know what? I got to looking at, I mean, we did, so you and I talked about this before our pod. Amazingly, neither one of us were actually in a startup dynasty this year,
I know. Shocking.
which was kind of disappointing, knowing that we were kind of preparing for this. But we were in a startup dynasty together a year ago. And if you go back and look at that, you see, guys, it is a startup dynasty. You see me being stupid and taking Dante Moore. You see Malachi Nelson go right off the board right after that. You see Nico Iamalieva go off the board, and
That's
those guys
true.
are in perfect landing spots. Well, Dante Moore wasn't, but they're in good landing spots. They have a chance to
Turns out.
play. They have a chance to play by year two. Things, Jackson Arnold went like in the middle of that first round. So like those are guys that I've heard. I haven't seen a whole lot of tape, I'll be honest, on Bryson Underwood. I haven't seen a whole lot of tape. He didn't even participate in the Elite 11 because he's one of those guys, kind of like Arch Manning, where he's like, screw it, I don't need this. I'm gonna be the top guy no matter what. I don't need to show you guys anything.
Oh,
He's
yeah.
going to LSU. At least he's committed right now to LSU. We've seen LSU create quite a few really strong fantasy options, even with Mike Denbrock not being there. So yeah, I'm going Bryson Underwood. I think, not saying I would do it, although I might, because I took Dante Moore, but I think that in startup drafts next year, Bryson Underwood, the number one overall player, will certainly be somebody considered.
I mean, again, I'm caught off guard because I legitimately
As
for completely forgot to
soon as I
consider
wrote his name down, I'm
2025,
like, man, this may blow Jared's mind.
freshman for next year. No, I understand the argument, right? Like, and I agree with you. There are people who take freshmen in the startups in first rounds every single year. I'm personally, I don't. Again, I've told you like where I kind of lay things out. I'm like, I need guys that have proven it and have 2 years left of production. That's where I start. And then there's plenty of other freshmen that I can take shots on later on, right? I do the same thing in drafts, right? Where like I'm gonna take a Abu Samba over a lot of the freshmen that are coming in, right? Because like I just know for a fact he's gonna be the number one guy there. Bryce Underwood, if there's gonna be a freshman that would take a shot on, probably him, like right,
I
perfect
mean, they're
top
losing.
quarterback.
Let's assume Nuss has a really strong year. He's going pro.
He's gone.
So I mean, it kind of aligns to where he could come in and actually compete year one, be in a good system. I mean, it seems like he's the number one overall player. I mean, it just seems to be a strong candidate in my mind.
This also assumes, though, that LSU's offense it keeps humming in the absence of Mike Denbrock, right? But, like, again, it's an assumption that I think is warranted. Again, they saw what they had last year. It's kind of like when Georgia lost Todd Monken and they brought in Mike Bobo, and people were like, "Oh, he's going to change the offense again." I'm like, "Are they really?" Because they saw what worked, and they don't want to go away from that. I don't think LSU's going to want to go away from what Denbrock was doing last year. So, yeah, if there's going to be a freshman that I would throw into this, I would say yeah, Underwood makes the most sense. I personally just did not consider.
I love this. Our lists are so different. I was afraid we were going to list off the like 9 or 10 of the same players, and this be the most boring episode ever. So this is
Nope.
not that. Who you got at six?
I'm going to make your day, Nate. I got Damon Williams as my next one.
What? What?
I got Damon Williams. He's
Damon Williams is not on. Damon Williams did not make my list.
Really? I thought he's your number one quarterback coming into this year.
No. That guy is on my list.
That guy's on. Oh, yeah, likewise. Right. But even so,
I do like Damon Williams. Yes.
My next three guys here. You kind of touched on it earlier, right? Quarterbacks get inflated in Dynasty, right? Mm-hmm. Like the guys that are going to be around for multiple years. You're going to see more quarterbacks go off in a CFF startup dynasty than you would in a redraft league, right? I think that Damon Williams and two of the other guys we'll talk about here today are going to be right there next year. Damon Williams, Will Rogers will be done after this year. We might even see Damon Williams start this year, depending on how Washington seasons go, right? They got a really tough start to their schedule. They're playing in the Big Ten. Very likely they don't even make a bowl game. They're probably going to want to see what they get out of Damon Williams, and his skill set perfectly matches what we want to see in a CFF quarterback, right? He's got a good arm. He's uber athletic. He can rush the ball quite a bit. Plenty of opportunity in a school that is needing to rebuild. They're going to be playing from behind a lot. He's going to need to play hero ball a ton. He'll follow Jed Fish wherever Jed Fish goes. If Jed Fish is only at Washington for, 2 years or something like that, he'll follow wherever Jed Fish goes that third year, in which case I think he'll be just fine wherever he goes. I do think he's a power four level quarterback. I think Damon Williams is probably, I would say, the person that people would be most interested in next year. But all three of the quarterbacks that I'm going to list off here, to me, are right there. I can see the argument for all three of them in terms of where you could put one ahead of the other. But okay. Damon Williams would be the first one I put up here.
Okay. That's a fun play again. He did not make my list. I don't really have a good reason why, because I do like Damon Williams. Jed Fish does bounce around more than just about any coach, so that would concern me. I think most landing spots, yeah, he probably would take Damon Williams with him. I mean, hell, he already took Damon Williams with him from Arizona, right? He signed with Arizona. Technically, Damon Williams is a transfer. Florida's the only spot where, I mean, everybody assumes the next job that Jed Fish has taken is Florida. And clearly there is a quarterback there at Florida that Jed Fish would be forced to probably try to keep. I don't know. I mean, Kalen DeBoer didn't really make much of an effort to keep, what's his name that went up to Ohio State? Saiyan. Didn't really make much of an effort to keep Julian Saiyan and brought Austin Mack over from Washington.
If anything, so he pushed him out.
Yeah. So, but that's fun, man. I like that call. That's good. If I were playing the EA Sports college football game, Damon Williams would be one of the first players that I would try to play with. Because they probably
got him super underrated.
Yeah, probably. He probably can't hit the broadside of a barn. If they watch the spring game, then he's probably like a 47 on like passer accuracy or whatever. So because he was pretty bad. Okay. My number seven is Mekhi Hughes, who we've already talked about. So let's just bounce it right back to you. Who you got at seven?
We'll just keep going down my quarterbacks here. We'll go Cedric Bailey. Again, very similar.
I knew this was going to be on your list.
I'm sorry, man. I love what I saw.
I don't hate it.
Again, a very, very similar deal here though, right?
I do have holes I can poke in this one, but go ahead.
No, that's totally fair. Very similar to Damon Williams, clear backup in a CFS system we like, right? If he gets the job next year, you're looking at potentially 3 years of quarterback in Robert Anae's system, which the ceiling is what Brandon Armstrong was his last year at, or the last year that he, Bronco Mendenhall, and Robert Anae were all there, right? I understand the holes here, right? Robert Anae's an offensive coordinator. Much easier for him to be hired away than any other than like a head coach, right? And we've already seen him move schools twice in the ACC. He's not afraid to move around to whoever's willing to pay him the most amount of dollars. But I do think having a clear succession plan at quarterback is going to help Robert Anae want to stay at NC State now. Because think about what he had at Syracuse, right? He had Garrett Schrader and then Carlos Del Rio Wilson, right?
Right.
There wasn't really much exciting to really keep him there outside of maybe LaQuint Allen. But even then, he doesn't really love using the running backs like a lot of other offensive coordinators do. So my argument was, or is, that you know, Cedric Bailey would be the reason why Robert Renee might want to stay, as long as NC State's willing to pay him. So,
yeah.
But that's pretty much what it boils down to, right? Again, it's another quarterback, 3 years in a great system potentially here. Yes, there's always a chance of a coach moving on, Cedric Bailey transferring after one good year, things like that. But everybody's got that at this point. Nate, what are your holes you're going to poke in me?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've already kind of mentioned him. You know, Anae's not the head coach. He could, you know, he's coached at BYU, he's coached at Virginia, he's coached at Syracuse. He could be off to somewhere else next year. And if they've got a situation where they like their quarterback, maybe, you know, maybe he doesn't follow, CJ Bailey doesn't follow Anae. So who knows? But like you said before we even started this scenario could play out for any of these people. So it's kind of hard to really justify that situation. I, again, similar to Damon Williams, totally get your justification on this one. And you know, you could definitely be kind of nailing it next year as far as somebody that's going early. We kind of need to. I think if I'm projecting like next year's first round, most people are going to be like NC State quarterback, like. True. Two things have to happen. Either we need to see some of CJ Bailey, like you know, like he's playing at least multiple games towards the end of the season, or we need a situation in which his name's
Grayson McCall
goes absolutely ballistic, right? We need one of those two things probably needs to happen, and they certainly could because Robert Renee is known for having quarterbacks that produce at a very, very high level. So don't hate that pick at all.
Let's talk about the guy probably that everybody's waiting on us to talk about, Nate, and I assume is the this year freshman quarterback.
He's not next on my list.
Not next on your list?
Oh. Nope. He's coming up soon. Just wait. Okay. We'll get there. I think the difference in our lists is that I did consider some second year quarterbacks in 2024 that will be third year quarterbacks in 2025 that could potentially move on to the NFL. Gotcha. And that's where I'll go with my next one. So my number eight here, and I actually debated not putting him in here, not because of the NFL thing, just because I like him. I don't love him. Which sounds crazy from a Sooner fan because my number eight is Jackson Arnold.
Okay.
So, obviously quarterback of Oklahoma, will be in a similar situation this year as Avery Johnson, highly touted. And the staff said, thanks, but no thanks to the starter this year and ready to turn the page for Jackson Arnold. So, I mean, we don't have to go into a whole lot of as far as like what to like about Jackson Arnold. I mean, he was Gatorade Player of the Year, Elite 11 winner, blah, blah, blah. I think the only reason why I didn't have him in that same group as Avery, Nico and Byron Brown is I'm not as confident that he's on that same level as them. I think he's really good. I just don't think Dylan Gabriel type season is going to be close to what we get from him this year. So, and if that doesn't happen, like if he's just like, say like he's QB 15, QB 20 this year, I don't know that he's going in the first round next year. That's my concern.
I mean, if top 20 quarterback, like 2 years of that, like I could see it. My main thing with Arnold is the same thing with Nico, right? Where I don't see him staying past his third year.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where like if he performs at the level we think he can, like the level that we're drafting him to,
yeah,
then he's going pro. Otherwise, we just missed on our draft pick because he didn't perform at that level.
That's what I was just saying. Like, right, it's 1 year regardless, right? Either he stinks it up his third year, doesn't go to the NFL draft, and you know, then you're waiting on that fourth year to really be the year you were kind of hoping he would have, or you get it that third year and boom, he's off to the NFL. So to me, he's a one and done regardless, and that's why I can't put him in the first round. But pretty much as far as it goes.
I debated him versus a few other quarterbacks that I'll mention on my honorable mention at the end, and it all came down to there's nobody challenging Jackson Arnold for this job. It is his job 100% for the next 2 years.
Agreed.
And there are enough remains of that beer and shoot type scheme with the staff that I think that there's still opportunity for a big couple of seasons here. Who did you have at eight? I think
Okay,
you already
so
mentioned him.
I would say, I think we can go ahead and just bring up DJ Lagway again. He's kind of
Yeah.
he's the third one here in my trio of this year freshman quarterbacks that I expect to make big jumps next year. Similar to last two, again, he's going to be starting somewhere next year, right? If it's not at Florida, he's going to be he'll be doing it somewhere else. I've made my case before for him about how I don't think there's like he's easily probably the highest floor quarterback out of all of these guys. He's rated the highest rated QB in the 2024 class. He'll possibly enter next season with 4 years of eligibility left, but also, like, once again, I don't expect him to use all those because I think he's a really good quarterback, obviously. Even if he stays under Napier, like, Napier somehow keeps his job after this year. We see Napier, although, again, obviously Anthony Richardson didn't reach the ceiling he probably could have had in other offenses. Napier wasn't enough of a drag to keep Anthony Richardson from being a CFF quarterback, and I think that kind of provides a nice floor for what we can expect from Lagway. Maybe a little bit lower because, again, Anthony Richardson was just an absolute freak in athleticism, so like he was able to overcome that somewhat. But Lagway is a pretty good rusher as well. And if Napier's fired, you kind of mentioned it before, Nate, Florida can hire a better
Not
offensive
necessarily a
coach.
bad thing, yeah.
I would
It's
say
not
they can
necessarily.
hire an offensive coordinator or better offensive coach, or Lagway enters the transfer portal. We know for a fact Lincoln Riley wants him. We know for a fact Lincoln Riley was interested in him, so that's already one awesome system that he could go to that could be really, really good. There's plenty of others as well. Who's to say he's not the starting quarterback at Alabama the next year, right? I don't really see a path where Lagway just completely bottoms out, and so I think that makes him worth a first-round pick in next year's drafts,
Yeah.
unless we see him just absolutely stink it up freshman year. And even then, I think people would excuse like saying like, well, he's a freshman, he's got some stuff to figure out.
Yeah. My only devil's advocate take to that is what you just described was Dante Moore. Like, we see him, he struggles, and then he goes somewhere to get developed. That would be worst case scenario, right? We saw kind of worst case scenario for Dante Moore. But I 100%. So DJ Lagway is number nine. He's next on my list. So agree with you. He was somebody I kept looking at the list. It's like I just can't leave DJ Lagway out because I feel like he is just people are going to be too confident in him. I'm confident in him. Like he is my clear number one quarterback in this incoming freshman class for CFF purposes. So I don't think it's a bad thing if they suck and Billy Napier ends up getting fired. If they don't suck and he doesn't and DJ Lagway stays and great. I mean, that means probably the offense did pretty good this year, right? Two potential landing spots that I will say for DJ Lagway if he were to transfer. Number one, I know Lincoln Riley tried like hell to try to flip him at the very end. So USC could be a spot. I think here's kind of a wild one, but Texas A&M's got money. DJ Lagway's from that area, Texas, anyways. And boy, him and Colin Klein could be real fun, right? I mean, we've seen that. So I think that could be fun. The only other than he just kind of like we see him and he's not as good as we hoped. The only other bad outcome would be is like if Clemson actually decides to take transfers. And I mean, they made a push for him pretty hard in recruiting too. But yeah, he's my number nine. So we'll send it back to you. Who is your number nine, Jared?
You're gonna keep it going on my list, all right? I'm gonna
Yeah, you
say
keep because I somehow you always name my guys. I don't name any of yours. So we can skip over most of mine.
I will go say and like take a pause here and like kind of describe like these last like three spots were kind of hard for me because
Okay.
I want to put more running backs, but let's be real, running back is the position that is the most likely to go to the NFL early.
Yep.
And so
Agreed.
there were two running backs that I was considering here, two Big 12 ones, both guys that I like. They're right next to each other in my dynasty rankings. In fact, I think I have one as 12, one as 13. And
Okay.
I'm gonna go with the guy that I think is less likely to go to the NFL, but I think it's hard for me to justify really any running back staying past 3 years that are here because, again, just the nature of the position. But I'm going to throw out Cam Cook.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
As I get more and more through this offseason, more and more confident I am in Cam Cook as a CFF option this year and just moving forward. Because, again, like the last couple of years, we've really seen Sean Dykes kind of sneakily have like a really high floor running back for CFF every single year between Kendre Miller and Amani Bailey. And obviously we had some backs going back to the SMU times where, like, surprisingly, like if you're looking for a solid back to just kind of rely on year to year, I think Cam Cook kind of sneakily getting this job in sophomore year, providing you 2 years. Yes, third year, it's going to be a big question mark as to whether or not he'll actually stay for his final year. And even then, could transfer. As we said, all of these guys at this point have those qualifications. But Cook, I think, like, has probably the highest floor among any of the remaining running backs that have 3 or more years of eligibility going into next year. So that's my pick. Given your reaction, Nate, I have a feeling he was not on your list.
He was not on my list. Let me say the things I like about this. Like you mentioned, Sonny Dykes actually is an incredible CFF running back producer. You can go back all the way to his time, I believe, when he was at Louisiana Tech. Like, incredible running back showings year in, year out. SMU, really, really good. And let's be honest, we don't know how long Kendall Briles is going to be as offensive coordinator, but Kendall Briles has had an incredible, history. We saw it with Rocket Sanders. We saw it with Motor Singletary over at FAU. Yes, I like that side of it. I can't get there quite yet with Cam Cook. I haven't seen anything from this guy that indicates that he's worthy of that high of a draft pick. I know he's really moving up a lot of people's boards. I can get it because it is a good system. I'm going to need to see a little bit more before I can get quite there. So this is one where I would probably disagree with a decent amount. So, but I like it. I like the flag plant there. Okay, let's see, that was your nine. My nine was DJ Lagway, so we've already covered that. Let me get one that I can
you need to turn here at some point.
Yeah, let's do it. So this is my only other wide receiver. We talked about earlier Pofeli Ashlock. Here's my guy, Micah Hudson.
Okay.
Texas Tech. So I don't think it needs a whole lot of description here. This is somebody that is a five-star that falls into, at least as it stands in 2024, a really good wide receiver system historically from Zach Kittley. So, again, like Cam Cook, Damon Williams, CJ Bailey, DJ Lagway, we haven't seen anything from Micah Hudson. So, but we have heard the staff rave about him, and it's a prime spot. I could definitely see, even if he just gets, 700 yards and 6 touchdowns, he's as long as that staff stays intact, I think there's a really good chance we could be drafting him pretty early next year in dynasty startups, guaranteed 2 years left.
Yeah, Micah Hudson, I don't have it actually. Now that I realize, I think Ryan Williams and Pofeli Ashlock were the only two wide receivers I had. Micah Hudson was easily considered for me. He didn't make my top 12, but like I'd say he's probably 13. Like, you're right, everything's there for him to be a potential monster for CFF. The only thing is still that question of, like, as much as we like Kittley as an offensive coordinator, like, man, he has not been able to recreate that offense over at Texas Tech, and we need him to recreate that offense if Micah Hudson is going to be a first round pick in a CFF dynasty perspective. Because,
and I will say, if they go off, Texas Tech goes off this year, and we get from Zach Kittley what we thought we were going to get, and we get from Bear Morton what I thought I was going to get last year whenever I put him in my future first round pick, if Zach Kittley takes a job somewhere else, that doesn't necessarily mean Micah Hudson's following him, right? No. That's not a scenario that could be all that likely.
You don't commit to Texas Tech as a five-star without being somewhat loyal to Texas Tech as a school.
It was a very, he committed early and then just
Early.
like stuck with him. And I was like, is this really happening? Like, are we, this is like, Juju Lewis. It's like strongly considering Indiana right now. I'm like, is this happening? Is this like Indiana gonna maybe pull a five-star quarterback that's committed to Lincoln Riley? Like, this is what's happening right now.
Hey, I love it. College football is weird, man. I mean, shoot, I'm trying to pull a five-star quarterback at Kennesaw State in the game right now. Not happening.
I wish
I
you
was
luck with
that
with Auburn and Georgia in your backyard. Good luck.
Yeah, I know, it's great. No, I would say I really appreciate that in the game. Like they make recruiting very hard. Like if you're at one of those smaller schools, like you will not land just a random five star. All right, yeah. Again, my cousin, he was somebody that I was considering.
Who's your who's your number 10?
Number 10. I think Cam Cook was my number 10, but.
Oh, I thought he was your 9.
Well, he's my number 10 because we threw in Avery Johnson, right? And then so like
Oh, okay.
so
Well, your pre-show. Who's your pre-show before we talked about Avery Johnson? Who's your next guy up after Cam Cook?
I'm flag planting, man. I gotta do it. But John Mateer, man, I can't talk about him as much as I have this year without sitting here saying like he's gonna win that job and next year he'll be a top end CFF dynasty draft. Like again, we talked about already just the inflated value of quarterbacks. You give me Ben Arbuckle's quarterback for the next 2 years, a guy that's probably does not have a ton of NFL draft prospects. Like, yeah, he can transfer, same as everybody else on this draft. But Ben Arbuckle's quarterbacks have been like, you call kingmakers. Like, what do you call what's beyond a kingmaker, right? We have had three straight top 10 quarterbacks from Ben Arbuckle between Bailey Zappe, Austin Reed, and now Cam Ward last year. And none of those guys are like massive rushers. That's like absolutely insane to me that we can just lock in a passing quarterback as a top 10 guy for whoever wins that job. That's going to be infinitely valuable in CFF Dynasty. If Mateer wins this job, you're looking at a guy, again, probably not going to the NFL, probably sticking around with Ben Arbuckle. Again, he could transfer just like everybody else. I would have a hard time passing up on that in a first round of a CFF Dynasty draft of 2 years of a probably locked in top 10 quarterback. But of course, he has to win the job.
I was gonna say, are you gonna mention the elephant in the room
I would
here?
say he has to win the job.
John Mateer was, when I initially drew up this list, he was somebody that I strongly considered right in that kind of 8, 9, 10 range. And then I just eventually said, but what if he doesn't win the job? Like, I can't, it's hard for me to project a guy that could be playing at North Dakota State in the year 2025. I don't know. So, and I also consider the fact that, like, if he does what we think he's going to do this year, he wins the job, he performs very well because he is a Zach Kelly, because he is a Ben Arbuckle offensive coordinator. Washington State is not keeping Ben Arbuckle, right? That's not happening.
I'm shocked they kept him this year.
I was too. I was like, dude, you know I drafted John Mateer in all my dynasty drafts last year. And I was talking to Andrew Katz about this. I'm like, 'cause he was asking me about John Mateer. And I'm like, after the offseason rolled around, I'm like, did I like thread this needle with John Mateer where like Cam Ward moves on, Ben Arbuckle stays, they don't really pull in anybody else, and then their schedule somehow gets softer because they move to the G5. I'm like, what kind of weird, like, this is like playing out perfectly for John Mateer, but now it does look like it's a little bit of a QB competition. But yes, Ben Arbuckle, if they're great, I am concerned he's going to move on. Of course, there, I guess maybe the best case scenario would be he stays, becomes a head coach. They're so good that the head coach gets a job somewhere. But and I don't know that John Mateer is good enough to follow Ben Arbuckle if he goes to like a P5 job. So that I
Yeah,
think
fair
that
point.
that's the two reasons I left him off the list. As much as I like the upside of that, is that he could not win the job and he could not be a Ben Arbuckle quarterback next year. So
Nope, fair enough. Again,
good call though. He's on my honorable mention.
cool. I'm glad to get an honorable mention.
My number 11 here is One that's definitely isn't on your list because you are worried about guys leaving early, and that's CJ Baxter, running back at Texas. And I'm on the record with saying, I don't even know if CJ Baxter is going to win this job. Like, I don't even know if he's going to be the 1,000-yard back. We've already seen him, lose the job once. He could definitely do it again. This could be a Chandler Morris type situation brewing here. But let's be honest. I mean, if he does win that job, and he's a starting Sarkisian running back, he's going to be a top three draft pick in redraft next year. And if he is that, there is a legitimate chance that people are going to say, okay, yeah, it's a dynasty startup. I'm only going to get 1 year of him, most likely, but I'm willing to push chips in on that one season because he is a Sarkisian running back. Who wouldn't have wanted Bijan Robinson for his last season, right?
Well,
Everybody.
it's like people would push in on Ollie Gordon or Ashton Jeanty this
Yeah,
year, right? Where
exactly.
they're like, I have my rule of you got to have at least 2 years projected left for me to consider you in the first round, but not everybody has that rule. And so if you're just trying to
Agreed.
project what people are going to do, I think that's a very fair point.
Yep. He's kind of in that same boat, really, as John Mateer. He may not win the job, right? He may not be there, in 2 years. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with CJ Baxter.
I think it's a fair call. I guess I'll continue the run of Big 12 quarterbacks here, or quarterbacks, running backs here. I initially left him off my list, but since I think I have actually two more picks here, I think I miscounted. I'll go ahead and throw in Abusama. Like it's only fair for me to bring him up if we're bringing up CJ Baxter and Cam Cook as well. Like he's right there in the same range as these guys. If he's the Iowa State RB1, right? Like he's gonna be fantastic for a year. The reason why I have him lower than Cam Cook is because I do think that if he's the RB at Iowa State and he's as good as we think he probably could be this year, Iowa State has been a pipeline to the NFL in terms of running backs. Think Dave Montgomery, think your Breece Halls, right? NFL scouts are gonna be all over him if he does 2 great years at Iowa State, right? Like there's no way he stays for a third year unless Iowa State somehow gets some massive NIL contract that I never even knew was even capable of them. But
Corn
regardless, like
money. Corn money coming
more
in.
money. I thought you said something different for a second there, and I was like, Nate. But
Corn. Corn.
corn.
Corn. That could have been
Anyway,
bad.
but again, he's in the same boat as Baxter and Cook, and so I think it's only fair that I bring him up here, and he definitely probably would be more considered than the last guy I'm going to bring up, which you're probably going to be like, Jared, what the hell? Why are we even going this far with this player? But you got anybody else, Nate, before we get to our last guys?
No, I like this. I like the Abu Sama call. He's somebody I had on my list, and then I debated between him and CJ Baxter. I eventually just went with Sarkisian. It basically was the whole reason there. So I like that call. Sama is at the top of my honorable mention list here. So I have my 12th guy. I'll go first. It sounds like we both have a wild one. I kind of hope we both have the same thing because that
That
would
would
be
be really
hilarious.
funny.
But here's my last guy. It is Breezy Dubar at Boise State.
We don't have the same guy, but I love the call.
Right? This is me reaching back into that Ashton Jeanty call from a year ago and just saying, okay, if I thought a year ago Ashton Jeanty was going to get enough run to where he would be to prove he's a first round pick the following season, why doesn't that play out with Breezy Dubar here? While I think I could, I will say, Syer Gaines does worry me a little bit for this, because I do think this could be more of a three-headed type thing. Like I think there's a reality that plays out where Syer Gaines gets as much run as Dubar does. So that would ahead and kind of follow up on Ashton Jeanty and say that Breezy's the next guy up, and if he proves it enough, people are going to be willing to invest in another Boise State running back next year.
Yeah, and he'll have the 2 years, and like unlike GNT, I don't think Dubar will have the NFL buzz that GNT
Right.
will have, and I do think there's a decent chance that he sticks around for 2 years, much more than I expect GNT to get his fourth year there. So,
Who's your wacky call here?
wacky call. Andrew Katz is going to hate me because, again, this is going way too far with this hype. But you know what? I thought about it. I'm like, shoot, I'm going for it. Trek Kekahuna.
Oh my God. No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let's hear
So,
it.
this obviously assumes Will Polling leaves after this year, right?
Sure. I
That
hope so.
after this, he redshirted last year, so he has 4 years of eligibility going into this year, right? He will play behind Will Polling this year. Technically, that leaves 1 year left for him, and he could just use up the 1 year, but that still got 3 years of eligibility that I'm willing to kind of take the shot on, like. Maybe he uses 2 of those 3 years before he heads off to the NFL. That's a Phil Longo slot receiver right there for 2 years. The staff sounds extremely excited about Kekahuna. We didn't really get to see him until the very end of the season in the bowl game. And if you listen to Bud
Yes,
Elliott's
I know
summer
exactly where you're going.
school on Wisconsin, the beat reporter and by extension the staff honestly sound a little bit more excited about Kekahuna than they even do about Will Polling. Will Polling will be the starting guy there, obviously, but given the kind of language that they're using, like maybe it's not outside the realm of possibility that Kekahuna gets some work this year and takes that into next year, and boom, you got a guy there that you're looking at for a couple of years potentially.
I mean, they
Obviously,
coexisted in the bowl game, right? I
they
mean,
did.
he Kekahuna played, and so did Pauling. So, I mean, that's very possible.
But again, similar to other guys, just assume Phil Longo sticks around at Wisconsin, and he's absolutely like I don't trust Wisconsin to really hold on to Phil Longo for that many years. I mean, I was shocked they got him in the first place out of North Carolina. So we'll see how that plays out. But that's my wild card I'm throwing out here at the very end.
That's a real doozy of a wild card. So you could have given me at least 100 guesses. I would not have come down with Trek Kekahuna. I love it. It's kind of awesome. He's a player I honestly didn't even know who he was 2 months ago. Can you imagine 2 years ago us saying a backup Wisconsin wide receiver would be projected as a first round
That's why I love this
pick?
game, dude. Why I love this
Things
game.
change so fast. Just systems can change so quickly. But yeah, I mean, look at Phil Longo's slot wide receivers, right? I mean, we saw it at Ole Miss. We saw it in North Carolina. We saw it last year. You and I talked many, many times about Will Polling, and people are like, "Who?" I'm like, yeah, the guy that's going to win the slot for Phil Longo. If you read any of the practice reports, and he's actually going to be really good. Slot does matter when it comes to Phil Longo. So, while I don't think he will be a first round draft pick, I kind of like that toss out there. Do you have any specific honorable mention guys other than obviously, like you didn't mention Avery Johnson wasn't on your list, but outside of that.
Yeah, I mean, Avery Johnson, again, if I did this again, he would absolutely be on my list. But Kevon Lacy probably would be the only real honorable mention I would kind of throw out here. He was somebody I initially had on my list. I kind of scratched him off as we went through because I was like, I'd rather talk about Abu Samah and some of these other guys. But Kevon Lacy, right, there's a path for him to being the starting Mizzou running back next year. Because, again, both Carroll and Nate Ruel have 1 year of eligibility left this year. Doesn't matter what happens in that backfield. They're both gone. Now Mizzou can go out and grab another running back to pair with Lacy. That's
That's what I was going to
totally,
say.
totally possible. I mean, shoot, we were throwing around Mekhi Hughes earlier as a potential fit in that offense, which he would be fantastic. But Lacy's a guy that the staff seems to like. Again, a lot of us on the recruiting team have him in our top five or have them in their top five running backs for this class. So clearly this is a very big get for Mizzou, right? He'll be sitting behind these guys for a year. None of the other guys in that backfield, like Jamal Roberts and the like they haven't really done anything. They haven't really kind of made a move. Maybe Lacy falls in the same footsteps, but like for right now, I would project him as the RB1 for Mizzou next year. And yeah, like
Any
Cody
other?
Schrader, year one wasn't great, but in year two, that's when he obviously popped off. Lacy obviously will get his year one this year behind those two guys. And then he'll be ready to go in year two.
I like it. I like it. Any others?
That's kind of the main ones. Let me see if I can run through some guys that I probably like off the top of
Well,
my.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'll just list if there, I'll let you look at it. I'll list a couple here off that made my honorable mention. Abu-sama, like I already mentioned. Here's one that I'm super invested in. This is kind of like Avery Johnson, Chandler Morris. He actually has multiple years of eligibility left,
He's
which
got 2
is
years, I think.
which is kind of crazy. So if he were to go bonkers this year and be in, like, who knows where he? This is his third. Is this his third school?
Third school, I
Yeah, it
think,
was
because there's Oklahoma. Yeah.
OUTCU. Yeah. So he could be at a fourth school. I got to mention my guy, man, Jalen Raynor,
I was
right?
wondering when you were going to bring him up.
I was actually debating between him and Jackson Arnold in that spot, and I bench. And again, that's why I said Jackson Arnold's got nobody pushing him for the job. While
I would have put Raynor over Arnold.
would you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and while I don't think Timmy McClain is challenging Raynor for the job, I get it that if he were to falter for a couple of games, there's a chance that they would give Timmy McClain some run. If Jackson Arnold falters for a couple of games, nobody's taking his job. He's still going to be the QB there. And then the other one was another Oklahoma guy, actually, is Gavin Sawchuk. I don't know that he's going pro this year or next year. I could see him playing for a couple more years at Oklahoma. So I think that's kind of the guys that I have there.
An interesting name I'll throw out to you here, Nate. Obviously, again, we kind of like Cam Coleman, Jeremiah Smith, again, top end wide receivers there, but like a guy that's kind of a little bit deeper that I've been drafting a lot of in supplemental drafts this year, Devin McEwen, UTSA wide receiver. I mean, again, like obviously,
I like it.
like we don't know what that offense is going to look like totally this year, but even with the offensive coordinator change last year, right? Like Joshua Cephas was still pretty dang awesome, so. Maybe regardless, he's the top guy at UTSA for 3 years.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it. That's solid. That's solid.
So,
Okay. Let's recap the list real quick. Just so the listeners, because we don't have graphics on this, so just so the listeners can see, and we can tweet these lists out later too. I'll go through mine right here. My number one, Avery Johnson, quarterback, K-State. My number two, Nico Iamalieva, quarterback, Tennessee. Number three, Byron Brown, another quarterback, South Florida. Four, Darius Taylor, running back, Minnesota. Five, Pufelei Ashlock, wide receiver, Hawaii. Six, here we go, Bryson Underwood, quarterback, high school. Soon to be LSU.
yeah.
Number seven, Mekhi Hughes, running back, Tulane. Eight, Jackson Arnold, quarterback, Oklahoma. Nine, DJ Lagway, quarterback, Florida for right now. 10, Micah Hudson, wide receiver, Texas Tech. 11, CJ Baxter, running back, Texas. And 12, Breezy Dubar, running back, Boise State.
I'll run through mine real quick. Again, Byron Brown 1, Pufelei Ashlock 2, Ryan Williams 3, Darius Taylor 4, Mekhi Hughes 5. Damon Williams 6, Cedric Bailey 7, DJ Lagway 8, Cam Cook 9, John Mateer 10, Abusama 11, and Trek Kekahuna as 12. If, for those of you keeping track at home, we had six players that were on both Nate and I's list. That was Brown, Avery Johnson, Pufelei Ashlock, Darius Taylor, Mekhi Hughes, and DJ Lagway. And then we had obviously the whole host of guys that fell afterwards. Yeah, I was gonna have us like debate who should fill those last six spots, but we're already an hour and a half here, Nate, so I think we
Wrap it up.
slow things down, wrap it up, and we'll let the listeners debate. Let us know on Twitter, at us on Twitter, and let us know who you think those final six spots should be filled by.
I love it. I love it. This was a lot of fun,
This
man.
was
We
great.
I was really afraid we'd have a lot of the same people and just do that whole thing back and forth. So we definitely did not. Lots of fun debate on this. So anything else that we didn't cover either during the show or after or before the show, Jared, that we need to touch on before we head out?
No, again, just head over to campusgain.com. If you're trying to get into underdog, we got a lot of tools there. If you want the CFF guys, $20, it's easily the best value on the market, in my opinion. No bias there at all. And then for CTN, again, we got the underdog show, but then afterwards we'll be having our crash course series that you guys really enjoyed last year. We'll start with quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers. And that'll pretty much lead us to the start of the season. I can't believe that we're pretty much already just a month and a half away from the
Love
season,
it,
Nate.
dude.
This is
We're so close.
crazy.
But so when we record this show next time in a month from now, I mean, we're literally going to be like 2 weeks from from the start of the season. So
that's
going to be incredible. So for me, I don't have much going on, but I have started to kind of fire up the writing juice again after
your old typewriter. You know,
after draining it from the CFF guide, I've recharged the batteries. I do have an article that should be coming out within a couple of days of when this episode lands, and that's what I have termed the nuclear option.
I love it.
So I'll just leave it at that. I won't go into too much detail, but it's the nuclear option. That's the name of the article. So we'll wrap it up there. Thank you guys for joining us. We will have one more episode before the season begins. Like I said, just we're right there. We're right on the edge of college football kicking off. Happy drafting. As we are now in the heart of the CFF draft season, be sure to check out campuscanton.com, CFF guide for all your needs. Good night. Good luck, everybody.